from the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll take a glimpse into the future. But here's what's happening. Very tragic story in Las Vegas over the weekend. A Las Vegas couple who gunned down two police officers while they were in a pizza restaurant eating pizza, and a civilian before killing themselves apparently looked at law enforcement as oppressors. Among the clues, a Don't Tread on Me flag, a Nazi swastika that the couple placed on one of the police officers that they ambushed Sunday at that pizza restaurant. They pinned onto the other officer's body a note saying something to the effect that this is the beginning of the revolution. Police said that Jared Miller shot the officer in the back of the head, then shot another officer in the neck before Miller's wife, Amanda, pulled a gun from her purse and also fired back. Well, they then took off to a nearby Walmart where they shot and killed a bystander before barricading themselves inside the store during a brief firefight with responding officers. Then Amanda Miller shot her husband repeatedly as the officers closed in on them inside the Walmart. She then turned the gun on herself. Unbelievable. Comedian Tracy Morgan remained in critical condition following a weekend car crash, but the actor's publicist said that he's showing signs of some improvement. The wreck took place about 1 a.m. Saturday when the limo van that Morgan was in was hit by a tractor trailer on the New Jersey Turnpike. The collision killed Morgan's fellow passenger, comedian James McNair, who performed under the name Jimmy Mack. U.S. Treasury Department says that it sets limits while allowing the nation's intelligence agencies to access reports that banks file on suspicious or large money moves by customers, including information about Americans. The Treasury said it was responding to a public records request, released the protocol at the end of last week, describing how it provides information in bulk to the National Counterterrorism Center, the hub of the government's anti-terrorism intelligence efforts. In a moment, Frank Ahern joins us. We're going to be talking about some of these issues and about your assets. Well, a Southwest Missouri man has been sentenced to 7 years in prison for possessing child pornography. 75-year-old Renee Harvey pleaded guilty to the crime last week just before his trial was scheduled to begin. Police arrested Harvey back in September of 2012. Detectives say they found more than 100 images of child pornography on Harvey's personal computer. Harvey has been jailed since his arrest because police believed he was a flight risk. Investigators say they found an airline ticket from Kansas City to the Philippines in his home. Now, this sicko should have been arrested and should be convicted and should be put in jail. But here's the big question. How in the world did the police even know that he had this on his personal computer? That's a question for Lauren Weinstein, the expert on the internet. Lauren, this is what baffles me. How do they know this stuff?
Yeah, well, usually the kinds of perverts who do this kind of thing aren't exactly the swiftest when it comes to technology. I mean, we can take that as a kind of a given. Most of the time, the way, and I'm speaking generically here because almost no details have been released about this case, and since he's pled guilty now, they may never be to some extent.
Right.
But usually what happens is the people who trade in this kind of material, and keep in mind, hundreds of photos is small potatoes to these guys. I mean, there's people who have been caught with hundreds of thousands of photos that they have. But they tend to collect these and trade these on particular sites and on particular, what you could call, underground networks. And once one of those is broken in some way, if somebody slips up and law enforcement discovers that site or those underground networks, then they basically just have to sit back and look to see who's accessing it, right? They just let it keep running for a while. People will continue to access it, will keep downloading those photos, and then they trace the IP addresses, and then they know. Something else that has helped to find these now, and I guess this probably isn't all that widely known, is that most of the photo sharing sites, the big photo sharing sites, now are running photos that users submit to them against a database of mathematical fingerprints of known child pornography. In other words, law enforcement has a corpus of a vast number of these that they've collected over time. They fingerprint them in a mathematical mechanism. Users who then submit photos that match those fingerprints, at that point, the file sharing services will notify law enforcement that those photos have popped up on a match. And then again, if one is discovered on a site, that can lead to more and more and more.
So it's not unusual that they could find him. Nothing sinister here. This is not like an NSA spying situation.
No, because what happens here is that these sites are very specialized, right? I mean, normally people will try to put this kind of material on a site that's mainly trafficked by other people interested in that material. And if you find one through any mechanism, either the photo matches from that law enforcement database, or somebody just slips up, maybe someone is arrested for some other reason, they get his PC, they see what accounts he uses, that leads to the site where all of the other people congregate. So it's not as if there's a vast amount of data being surveilled for this purpose, but there's a very targeted approach that's used looking specifically for these kinds of photographs, in fact, for very specific photographs.
Okay, Lauren, thanks. And if you want to track Lauren Weinstein, you go to our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Rats experience regret when their actions make them miss out on, let's say, better food options, according to a study. It is the first time regret has been identified in mammals other than humans. Researchers created situations where rats had to choose whether to wait to set amount of time for a food reward or move on to another one. Those that moved on and found the next offering was even worse showed regretful behavior. Now, I have no idea how a rat looks when he feels regret, but that's what they say. Doctors are being told not to routinely prescribe aspirin for a common heart condition that increases stroke risk. Guidelines from the National Institute of Health Care and Excellence are set to recommend that other drugs instead for patients with an irregular heartbeat called atrial fibrillation, warfarin or similar blood-thinning medicine is best, they say. Let's check in with Christian Weil. Christian, this sounds like it may be a study by the big pharma companies.
Well, it is true. First of all, hello, George. I haven't talked to you for a while. But it is true that there's a seemingly a growing concerted effort to discourage aspirin use as a preventive for stroke and for heart attack. The main concerns that they cite have been stomach and brain bleeds. But in this issue that you're discussing tonight, atrial fibrillation, AFib as most of us know it, is a very, very serious condition in which the atrium that controls the rhythm of the heart, that is the gatekeeper, that dictates when the ventricle on the left side opens and when the ventricle on the right side opens. When one has AFib, the concern is that the heart goes into fibrillation where it just vibrates, and in the course of that, the blood does not move forward as it is supposed to, and in that few seconds that it is in fibrillation, it can clot, form the clot, and go on to cause a stroke, primarily a stroke. And so it is a major, major concern. Now, what they're saying, up till now, many, many physicians prescribe a beta blocker to slow the heart, mm-hmm. and then to keep that clot from forming, to use either Coumadin, or now you see a great increase in a couple of other anticoagulation drugs like Pradaxa, which incidentally is very expensive, but has caused more than 2,500 deaths.
Jeez.
Coumadin, most people do not want to be involved with Coumadin, and so they are taking aspirin or have been taking aspirin. To answer your question, yes, Big Pharma certainly benefits from selling you one of the prescribed pharmaceutical drugs instead of aspirin.
All right, track Kristen, by the way. Kristen, you know, but this has been this study. I mean, people have been talking about aspirin for years, and now they're coming out saying, hey, don't take it.
Well, wouldn't it be interesting, George? Wouldn't it be interesting, and part of the equation, if there were a way for us to know through the years how many heart attacks, how many TIAs, how many ischemic strokes have been avoided because somebody was taking aspirin in their regimen.
Good point. Track Kristen, by the way, go to his website, myheartbook.com. In a moment, how to disappear from Big Brother. Frank Ahern is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest this hour. Frank Ahern is in business that resembles a game of international hide-and-seek. He was a skip tracer who hunted people from Belize to Bali and currently is a privacy expert who disappears people in and out of society. He's author of the newly released work, How to Disappear from Big Brother. And here is Frank on Coast to Coast. I hope you didn't disappear on me, Frank. You there?
I'm here. Thank you for having me. Much appreciated.
Skip tracer. What does that mean?
A skip tracer is someone who locates people. I would be hired by, like, detective agencies, tabloids, lawyers to locate people who did not want to be found, be it, you know, deadbeats, be it witnesses, long-lost loves. And my philosophy was if you could afford it, I could find them. And it was all done via pretext.
And how important was the computer to what you did, Frank?
Back then, it really was. Well, when I was doing it, there were no computers. It was all done on the phone. It was picking up the phone and pretexting phone companies, pretexting banks, and, you know, just extracting private information from various corporations to get your last known address, your Social Security number, your employment, whatever information helped me to find you.
Now, what kind of folks did you locate?
I located celebrities for tabloids. I located deadbeat dads, missing people. I mean, I was kind of like a wholesaler where investigators and law firms came to me, and that's all I did all day long is find people.
Frank, what was the strangest case for you when you found someone? What were they doing, for example? Were they in shock that you discovered them?
Yeah, I think most people, yeah, they're definitely in shock because sometimes they would try to, you know, hide themselves or do some, you know, minor mail forwardings and phone disconnection and forwarding of mail, never thinking that I'd locate them, and I would definitely, you know, find them, no problem. I worked the Monica Lewinsky case right before she was public in the news about the scandal. I was hired by a tabloid to locate her. Had no idea who she was, and I located her. My client said, watch the news tonight, and later that day, she came out on the news and the whole scandal. I was like, wow, pretty wild. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting things like that. The tabloid work was fun.
Okay, but now you make people simply disappear. First of all, why do you want to make them hide?
Well, people hide for, it comes down to money, violence, and information. Victims of stalkers, victims of abuse, husbands and wives and mates, business people who've gotten into bad business situation, to wealthy people looking to avoid abduction, to individuals who just fear Big Brother and say, hey, listen, I want to control my information. How can I do that? And how can I make sure that nobody knocks on my door, that I don't want knocking on my door? So it's a form of freedom, be it freedom, money, freedom from oppression, or freedom from intrusion.
And now when you make them disappear, Frank, I mean, totally different identities or, you know, just bank accounts, what happens?
No, I mean, I don't change identities. Only the government can do that. And, you know, new identities don't work. I mean, you never know whose identity you're buying. You could be buying a criminal's identity, or you could be buying an identity that 15 people are using.
Right.
I basically teach people how to become like a digital ghost where they use third-party services or they use offshore bank accounts or prepaid cell phones. I kind of remove them from the connection. You know, we used to erase our digital footprints, but we can't do that anymore. So it's teaching them just how not to be connected.
Was it difficult for you to learn this?
Not really, because, you know, being a skip tracer and being someone who knows how to find people and find information, I knew that it was important, what was important to do for my client. Plus, another thing, when I disappear clients, I create a lot of deception and disinformation. I'll create a lot of false trails where, you know, it may look like my client moved to Toronto or something like that, but they're actually living in Cincinnati. So I basically know both ends of it, and so that's like my greatest tool, is being in both businesses, you know, at one point in my life.
We're with Frank Ahern, author of How to Disappear from Big Brother. When now some of these, well, let me ask you quite frankly here, Frank. In some cases, are people trying to illegally hide money? Do you get involved with them doing that, or do you say, hey, I'm not touching you?
No, I mean, no, I'm not going to do something that's going to put me in jeopardy.
Okay.
99% of the people that contact me to do business, I don't do business with. I mean, if you're breaking the law, I don't need that. You know,
okay.
I have that's the bottom line.
Well, and that's probably a smart way to do it, too, and to look at it. So the kinds of folks who would come to you, the ones that you don't reject, give me a little scenario on the kinds of folks they might be.
You know, one woman I worked with recently who got out of a bad marriage, and her husband was very aggressive, and she just kind of felt like he wasn't going to back off. He made a lot of threats, and she just felt that it was important to pick up and disappear, and that he wouldn't find her because she just knew the type of individual he was. And so, you know, after we decided where she was going, you know, I created, you know, a background that she worked in the company, but it was really a fake company I set up. And this company rented this apartment for her. This company, you know, got the utilities for her. I mean, she had an online business she used so she could make money that way.
Yeah.
So she existed in this shell in a different city, and there was no connection to that city. So anybody looking for her, they would never find her in the city I put her in. They would just find her in the city I directed them at. And the most difficult part about disappearing is, how do you make money? Because you can't be Joe the bus driver in Chicago and be Joe the bus driver in, you know, North
right.
Carolina. It just doesn't work that way.
Now, in that case, were you able to find out whether he was trying to find her? Can you search him to find out what he's up to?
No, because, you know, most people are using information, so you don't know what they're doing on a computer or what they're doing throughout their day. I go into the assumption that the predator is breaking the law. They're hiring private investigators or information brokers who will get phone records and try to get bank records. So, you know, I come from the standpoint that they're here, they're aggressive, and they're not going to stop. And so when my clients disappear, that's one of the important things to discuss with them is, listen, just because you feel comfortable doesn't mean it's over with. You can't be comfortable. They might come in 6 months or they may never come. But either way, you got to be prepared.
So in this era, this digital era that we are in right now, how difficult is it for the average person to simply disappear?
Well, I mean, it's difficult for the average person to disappear because they don't always have the means.
Right.
However, if you do have the means, I mean, you can disappear because you can use technology. You know, you can use prepaid cell phones, prepaid calling cards. You can use third-party services. Like a lot of my clients, I teach them how to use a third-party service, like an offshore, you know, agency that makes your phone calls. You know, they're like an outsourcing company. They do your searching online. They create all the digital footprints so you don't create them. So with technology, you can basically, someone like you who has a radio show, you could be in Jamaica or you can be in Paris right now. Nobody really knows because technology has made it that we can do certain things from anywhere in the world. The problem is, you know, information, you get someone who can extract information, that, you know, that's where your problem lies because they might, you know certain tools better than you, or
right.
they might have information that you never know that they could find.
Sounds a little like Walter White in Breaking Bad, Frank, where he had all these portable phones and everything else.
Well, you know, you have to do it. I mean, you know, if you're a victim of a stalker and someone is looking to harm you, you have to utilize the tools, and you got to sometimes dump the phones, use new phones, never be direct in your communication. and, you know, using mail drops to have, you know, your tools in. So it is important to have your, I call them your disappear bag.
We're going to come back in a moment with you, Frank. We'll take some phone calls. Frank Ahern with us. How to disappear from Big Brother. And welcome back to Coast, Frank Ahern with us, how to disappear from Big Brother. Frank, identity theft is huge these days. Do you deal with that and how to disappear from Big Brother, or at least give people tips on how to protect themselves?
I don't really deal with individuals who have, like, identity theft problems. If you have one, it's a real disaster. My other book, The Digital Hitman, deals with identity theft and, you know, dealing with digital intrusion of personal information like credit cards.
When people are hacked and, you know, you got to call your bank and all that, it's a pain in the neck. I mean, do you have to literally go out and change everything?
Well, I think it's smart to change everything every once in a while. But, you know, when they do access your credit cards, unfortunately, they have your Social Security number, and when somebody has that, it's like the holy grail of personal information, because it's very difficult to get a new one, and everything in society pretty much needs our Social Security number, you know, phone to cable.
And, you know, when people, when you write a check, you know, you've got your routing number on your check, you've got your checking account number on your check. People, and with this digital age we're in right now, people can sometimes steal that and make payments if they have your information, can't they?
Right. I mean, the problem is, once you have somebody's information, I mean, you can get credit card. I mean, if a good thief can obtain other credit cards, sometimes they'll use part of your information and match it up with somebody else's information. And there's a term for it, I don't remember, where they're creating like a sub-identity of you, but it's still going against your Social Security number. So it is very difficult, and it can be extremely damaging.
Jeez. What has been for you the most heartwarming aspect of what you do, a case or something like that?
Well, I think the biggest thing is probably the victims of the stalkers, because, you know, life is really terrible for them.
Yeah.
And if I can put somebody in a place and they have peace of mind, you know, it's really a good thing. Plus, I've dealt with individuals who were wrongfully accused of things, and the information came out online. And once information comes online about you, you know, there's no turning back. And I was able to do some digital manipulation where it kind of cleared up the air. It kind of, you know, where when people searched their name, they didn't find the negative, the seriously damaging information.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that I find pretty cool and, you know, just good to the heart.
Do you try to protect people, for example, from county records where, you know, people want to go and do a property search and go visit them at their house?
No, I mean, the reality is public information is horrible. I mean, there's just so much out there about us, and we have no control over it. You know, if you're buying a house, you know, there are certain things you can do to protect your information, but the reality is, you know, that land deal, you know, is public record.
It's public.
I'm not sure in every state, but most states. And, you know, then they sell your information online and in between Intellius and ZavaSearch, and it just becomes regurgitated and keeps moving.
It really does. Well, let's take some calls here for you, Frank. Let's go east of the Rockies. Anne is in Toronto, Canada. Hey, Anne, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Anne, and how are you guys tonight?
We are okay. Go ahead.
Great. Hello.
Okay, I was just wondering, if you're hiding from Big Brother, how do you pay your income taxes?
Well, I don't say hiding, I say disappearing. I don't work with individuals who are criminals, okay? You have to pay your taxes, okay? But, you know, there's a record of that. But, if you're self-employed, you know, you're getting paid on 1099s. So, I mean, you still have to pay your taxes. Disappearing from Big Brother is not about breaking the law. It's about better protecting your information and keeping certain information private. And you have to pay your taxes, bottom line.
When you try to help people disappear, can you stop them from getting hit up by the NSA and agencies like that, Frank, or is that difficult?
No, I mean, I go with the understanding that our information is being taken, okay?
Yeah.
No matter what you do, it's being extracted. You can't do anything about that. However, how you access information can create privacy. If I was looking to search information and I don't want anybody to know about it, I would use a third-party service, an offshore company that will search for me, and they'll create the digital footprints. If I want to get emails from certain people, I don't want them coming to me, they'll go to a third-party service in India, Korea, you know, Japan, or, you know, the Czech Republic, something like that, and I'll get that information manually. They'll read me the email on a prepaid cell phone. I never get the digital footprint. Nothing leads back to me. So it's about distancing yourself and avoiding the connections.
When Edward Snowden came out with his revelations about the NSA, I bet you were not surprised at all, were you?
I've never been surprised about government extracting information. I mean, when I was in the skip tracing business, I was getting phone records, bank records, you know, doing it all via pretext. And if some guy from the Bronx was able to get it that way, it's no great leap to say, well, I'm sure the government's getting it too. And just because it's against the law, who says the government's not breaking the law? So you have to expect that.
Do some people come to you, Frank? Let's say somebody's involved in a relationship with somebody. Do they come to you and say, look, I want this person checked out. I want to know who I'm dating.
Situations like that, I would refer to a friend of mine who's like a private investigator. You know, my days of finding are long behind me. It's just, you know,
you've moved on.
The business the laws got tough. I walked away, and that was like the best thing. So I have a friend who'll do the finding for you.
Let's go to Pete, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Pete, you're on with Frank Ahern. Go ahead, Pete.
Thank you, George. Frank, if I was going to hide from somebody, I think the best way to do it is to allow them to believe that I was dead, to pretend that I died. Now, do you have anybody that comes to you that wants assistance in pretending that they died?
Yeah, but unfortunately, though, most people who fake their death do it by water because there's no body located.
Yeah.
And, you know, these days, you know, law enforcement is hip to it. Insurance companies are hip to it. You know, my suggestion is don't fake your death. Just go. Because if you read about people who committed suicide, which is the act of faking your death, you'll realize, you know, a majority of them have done it by water. And if you get one sighting, I mean, you could be in a hotel in Des Moines, some guy you went to high school with sees you, takes your picture, and tweets it on Twitter, hey, just saw my buddy I went to high school with, and you've been caught. We're in an instant information age, and so faking the death is not the way to go.
I've seen cases, Frank, where these weren't disappearances, but somebody would get a disability check every week and claim that, for example, that he was confined to a wheelchair, and then somebody would see him walking in a store and they take a picture of him, and that would be it for him.
Oh, when I was doing the skip tracing, we would do some disability work where they needed to find out if somebody, you know, was doing anything physical, and I located a guy who had a posting online looking for his long-lost love from high school, and I had my associate pose as her, and they started communicating back and forth. And he says, listen, I'm driving a bus to Atlantic City. Why don't you meet me next week, and you can come with me. Instead of her going there, the private detective showed up and got him on video.
I love it.
Yeah, you have to be careful.
When people want to disappear, I would guess most of them who have full-time jobs somewhere, they can't really disappear, can they?
Right. That's the problem. With clients, the first thing I ask somebody is, how are you going to make money? You can't go from, you know, to be a regular worker who gets a paycheck to a regular worker who gets another paycheck, because the problem is you'll be traced through your taxes.
That's right.
It's illegal for people to do that. And, you know, forget the government for a moment, but, you know, investigators do have contacts and sources, and they can access that. So that is a huge issue for people, and sometimes we can work around it, and sometimes we can't. I've worked with lawyers who had to give up their profession because they couldn't practice law because they'd have to be registered with the state, and they could be located that way. So a lot of times they'll try to work off the books but claim the income that they make, or they'll, you know, try to work in a new business that they can build or something, and you just can't have that 9-to-5.
Frank, how many people out there truly want to disappear? Is that a high number?
I think we all reach a point where we want to disappear sometimes. And I think what happens is the Internet has allowed us to dream a bigger dream, but also it's made it more realistic. Because, I mean, if you're a writer, if you work in radio, I mean, if you have a business, a mail-order business, you can disappear. But everybody has the palm tree lifestyle, I call it. They all want to go to the beach and drink Mai Tais and never be seen again. But the reality is, you know, the beach is expensive, and the beachfront property you're going to buy may not get electricity. You know, and you have to really think about where you're going, you're disappearing, and that you can financially afford it, because it's not easy.
Now, I also assume that the people who disappear don't have family members, because how awful would it be to disappear and you don't see your kids anymore or your grandchildren or anything like that?
Well, you know, with my clients, I always say, look, you can't burn a bridge. You can't just disappear and not tell your mother. You know, you can't tell your brother. I mean, in 3 years from now, you just never know what life is going to be. I mean, earthquakes happen. I mean, you could decide to pick up, move, and you happen to chose Montserrat. And all of a sudden, you know, Montserrat erupts and your vegetable stand and everything you have is now gone. What do you do? And I tell, do not burn the bridge. You know, pay your debts, move on properly, and that's the best way to do it.
Do some of them reappear as themselves years later?
I've had some of the victims of stalkers who have gone back home because either something quite unfortunate has happened to their predator, so they're no longer a threat. But most of the people I've dealt with have pretty much stayed, you know, off the radar.
They seem to like that, I guess, don't they?
It's a thing of freedom. You know, I mean, if you can make money, live the way you want to live, and, you know, not have to worry about certain freedoms being infringed, whether it's violence or intrusion or, you know, just the grind, it is a good thing.
Do you keep in touch with them, Frank, or do you simply say adios?
I say, you know, when I disappear somebody, I spend a week with them in that new city, teaching them how to exist in the city, from transportation to bus stations to, you know, what to do, what not to do. And then we're in touch probably for about a few months because there's a lot of paranoia that takes place.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get a hang up or somebody looks at them wrong. So I babysit for a while, but after a while, they just got to go their own way. And then they'll contact me if something comes up or just asking some various questions. But I got to cut the cord.
Do you have a contact in that city for them, or it's just you and them?
It's just me and them. I mean, what's important is to teach them how to do it. They got to be self-sufficient. They got to know how to pick up and go, and they got to know how to survive, you know, in a city in case something really bad happens. And they got to know how to get out of the city. They got to, you know, go to a mail drop that has prepaid debit cards in them in case they need money quick and need to move. So it's almost like some sort of urban training I give them.
Let's go to Dana, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Dana. You're up with us. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Frank, I have two questions. One, you know, the websites you mentioned, like Intellius, People Finders, WhitePages.com, they not only list your name, but they list your previous, if you're a woman, maiden names, and your relations, your parents, your children, even if they're little ones, and your siblings, and they list your age. So my two questions are, and I thought listing your age, I mean, employers can't ask your age until you're offered a job, and only then can HR know. So how can they list your age legally and not be sued? No, you know, it's still out there, so nobody's apparently brought a lawsuit or it's gone to the Supreme Court as of yet. And the second thing is, how do you get off those websites?
Number one, I don't know if it's legal or not illegal to post the age, okay? The problem is a lot of that information comes from utility companies like cable, phone, electric? Will it sell your name, your address? That's why if you look at Zava Search or Intellius, they got like a whole slew of addresses on you, and you can't get off it. It's unfortunate, but you can't. What I suggest to people is, you know, when you change the information on your utility, they don't need your correct billing address to a P.O. box, or they don't need your, you know, correct home number, or they don't need your employment once you have the services.
Mm-hmm,
so
that's right.
I say deviate that information, because all the information they have on you, you know, it's like when you call the phone, the cable company, they want your email address these days, or, oh, we need an updated work number. It's like, why? I mean, I just watch TV with you guys. That's all I do with you. You don't need my work number. And I say, don't tell them the truth, because eventually then bogus information will start coming online about you. And, you know, it's difficult. Somebody will have to figure out what's true and what's not true.
Cleaning up websites, that's very difficult, Frank, isn't it?
That is a huge problem. And the problem is with that is, I mean, you clean it up today, it doesn't mean that that information is gone. It means that an aggregator just may not have spread it again. So in 3 months from now, that information can show up on like another 100 websites. See, when I deal with a client who's got bad information online, I'll utilize deception, okay? And I'll make it appear that that negative information or that bad information is actually not you in Cincinnati, but the guy with your name in Atlantic City. And I'll create these fake digital identities that it appears they're the ones who made that stupid mistake back in college. So deception is the only way to fight these websites.
Does it take you a long time to set that up, or is it pretty quick?
It's pretty quick, actually. I mean, it's a long period of time. You know, it could take like a few months to work on, because you got to watch how the information grows. But the information starts getting out there pretty quick. But molding it properly can take about 3 months.
Let's go to Larry, Sacramento. Hey, Larry, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Thank you, George.
Sure.
I've got a question for you, Frank.
Sure.
Is it legal to get passports in different names from different countries?
Boy, I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, they have, let me just tell you one thing. There's a thing called camouflage passports and that you can buy online, and they're passports from countries that don't exist anymore, like Rhodesia, okay? And from what I understand, if you get caught with them, you will be prosecuted, because
I think there's
an intent behind it. I would never use something like that.
I mean, the passports, that's one thing you don't fool around with, because they'll crack down on you like crazy.
Yeah, you can't mess with that. And the truth of the matter is, anything that's fake that you're going to use, I mean, if you're not, you know, a high-end criminal and you deal with being questioned, I mean, going through customs, you're going to sweat, and you blink the wrong way, they're brilliant. They're smart. They know how to read people. It's just a stupid thing to do, to mess with something like that. I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm just saying the act itself of utilizing, you know, fake information, fake documents.
Name of the book by Frank Ahern, How to Disappear from Big Brother. And, Frank, what is your website for folks?
Disappear.info.
Super. Thanks a lot, Frank Ahern. Great information. Up next, let's take a glimpse into the future in a different kind of a way. You'll find out in a moment.